Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Robin Hicks. We welcome launch management PR consultant Camille Alacon.
Hi there.
And podcast producer Alice Terlikowski.
Hi guys.
Tim can't be with us today. He is moving into a flash new penthouse in the city. So this week,
Ships Ahoy, Three Drunk Monkeys produce love song for the Opera House.
Australia's Got Talent smashes 2 million mark.
Alan Jones and Loser Critics.
Spoof PR, does it work?
Advertising agency Three Drunk Monkeys has launched a long-form piece for the Sydney Opera House, which features various Australasian artists performing Nick Cave's The Ship Song. The artists, which include Neil Finn, Sarah Blasco, Temper Trap and Daniel Johns of Silverchair, sing parts of the song throughout different areas of the famous building. A couple of people picked up that the video was quite like the one for the BBC in the UK, featuring Elton John, David Bowie and Bono, to name a few.
And then later, when it gets dark,
we go.
Just a perfect day.
Feed animals in the zoo.
Then later, a movie too. And then home.
The agency was appointed the account about 12 months ago, with this piece about 10 months in the making. So, Robin, were you familiar with the BBC ad?
Yes, it was. Yeah, and I do remember it well. And I do see the connection that yourself and Tim made in that story. It did remind me of it instantly. But I think if I had to choose, I think the Sydney Opera House film is better shot. It's a better film. The BBC one felt a bit stitched together. You know, a bunch of artists sort of joined together a bit sort of clumsily. But then the video is sort of 24 years older. So I'd give the BBC one sort of the benefit of the doubt. Camille, what did you make of it?
I have to say, Mumbrella does quite enjoy, where possible, make comparisons with the UK equivalent example. But the reality is the average Australian consumer isn't going to remember a UK ad that was made in 1997. I would just say that right now and look forward to the next story that will make a comparison to the UK. However, for me, the actual film itself, and keeping in mind that, okay, saying that I don't remember that 1997 BBC film, for me, I was engaged and it made me actually think about the Opera House. Perhaps, you know, sometimes we forget that actually it isn't just for tourists. So it was a great reminder in terms of that production values. You know, it's a magnificent piece of work. Really, it's in the interweaving of the great architecture and the arts in Sydney. You know, it's quite inspiring. Actually, I would say if I was to make an Australian comparison, it was a bit almost Qantas-esque in that Australiana feel. You just take out the choir boys and girls and chuck in some Australian artists.
Yeah. It did feel a bit like an airline ad in places, I'd say, if I was cynical. But also, the thing about the BBC ad, I've only been in the market since March, but I didn't actually recognise a lot of the performance in the BBC ad, whereas in the Australian one, I didn't really know who these people were.
Yeah, exactly, which is why it would work well for the Australian audience, but you couldn't, you know, move that to offshore unless you chose the really well-known
exactly,
artists.
If you had the Olivia Newton-Johns of Australia and stuff doing a similar thing, perhaps. But I actually hadn't seen the BBC one before, so I'll hand that one to Tim. And while I can see the comparisons, I don't think it really matters if that we've seen you know, if we've seen a similar concept before, it's obviously been tailored to suit the product, being the opera house. And some people had, you know, had some issues with the fact that, you know, why were they playing backstage or in the docks in the back? And I quite like that. I think it gives you an insight into the building. It's behind the scenes. Everyone knows what the opera house looks like from the front. Or
exactly.
So if they were all out in the front of the steps, I think the cheese factor might have been turned up a little bit there. But I like that it was backstage. I think it was well done.
Yeah, I agree.
Camille, do you think there's a harm in basing ads on successful campaigns? Maybe not, you know, directly copying, but saying, hey, acknowledging that went really well, why don't we try that concept?
Well, I don't know if a creative will actually publicly say that we'll use that creative concept and appropriate that for our clients. But I think it's really hard to be original these days. If we're talking about the traditional TVC, you know, the beautiful film, it is very hard. You know, integrated campaigns is a different matter altogether. It's really hard to come up with the idea of the gorilla with the drums for Cadbury or the Old Spice. But then again, the Old Spice campaign is part of an integrated campaign. So, no, it's sometimes good ideas are good and interesting for the, you know, in their own right. And, okay, someone else has thought about it. Sorry.
Yeah.
As long as you engage your consumer for that brand, and nothing wrong with that. So hence, in this respect, I don't have an issue with it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't think a reused idea is necessarily a bad idea. I do think agencies are influenced by the advertising of the moment.
Sure.
And classic advertising. And all agencies will tell you that their approach is new, that they zig when others zag, all that sort of stuff. But, you know, they still go to award shows. They still go to Cannes. They can't help but be influenced and inspired by other ideas that have been born elsewhere. I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing.
Do you think agencies would have better luck? Camille, you said that an agency is never going to admit to, you know, using an idea that's already been, you know, produced. But do you think agencies, especially on a site like Mumbrella, when you get often work gets criticised for being similar, would they be better to say, hey, you know, we really were inspired by the work that was done in the BBC, you know, 14 years ago, we thought that this could work well for this
product? No, absolutely not. An agency won't want to be outwardly admitting and a client potentially reading the story saying that they haven't come up with the idea themselves, because you get paid for your original ideas. Yeah. So that would just be stupid. Mm. But having said that as well, I think a lot of these cases, agencies aren't aware of a 1997 UK piece of work.
Yeah.
Quite frankly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I just say, you know, I was chatting to a director called Paul Middleditch, who was the guy behind Cult and Slow Mo, which won a gold at Cannes. He actually admitted to me that Slow Mo was done partly because the agency wanted to do slow mo photography. That it was sort of in vogue at the moment, and that's part of the brief. We want to use this technique. So I guess it's an admission that, you know, we admit that, you know, this technique is being used, it's been used at the market at the moment, but we're still going to go ahead and we think it makes a great ad. So a lack of originality isn't necessarily a bad thing, I don't think.
Yeah, I think it's one thing using a technique that's in vogue, but there has to be an intelligent idea behind that and engaging creative. So there's one thing thinking of the core of the idea, but how are you going to deliver that and create that award-winning piece of work?
Yeah. And going back to the BBC and the Sydney Opera House thing, I think, you know, I was watching this, both videos last night with a friend who's from Thailand. She's saying that exactly the same idea is being used in Thailand. And she said before the BBC idea. I'm not sure whether I believe that. But it's a fairly obvious formula.
It
to
is.
Stir the senses, isn't it? Get a bunch of locally known singers and get them to sing a great anthem. I mean, it doesn't seem that...
Exactly. And again, for me, it was the production values that got me. It made me want to be a little bit cultural. In fact, I'm due to actually book in for a show shortly.
Ah, was that on the back of this, seeing this?
No, coincidentally.
That's a shame.
Janet Jackson.
Oh, of course. Enjoy.
Very cultural.
Well, next, Australia's Got Talent smashes 2 million mark.
You are listening to... Only one media company has the ability to connect brands with 95% of Australia. Southern Cross Austereo. For more information, visit southerncrossaustereo.com.au.
The grand final of Australia's Got Talent aired this Tuesday with an audience of 2.19 million viewers. Seven easily won the night as a result with a whopping 32.4% share. The premiere of Manu Fidel's dating show Dinner Date pulled in 1.1 million, which also helped share at 7's share for the night. We also saw the debut of 10's The Renovators on Sunday, which pulled in only 856,000. It grew as the week went on, with 978,000 on Monday. About the same on Tuesday and on Wednesday. It's following MasterChef, which is finishing up next week. So, Camille, any thoughts on The Renovators?
Oh, you've asked the wrong person the wrong question. I'm really not a fan of renovation shows. I did try to snack into it for a three-minute block the other night, and it pretty much looked to me like every other renovation show. But then again, I didn't get initial buy-in anyway.
It didn't grab you, right?
Yeah. No, I've got to agree. I like The Renovators. If I hadn't seen a home reno show for 6 months, I might be tuning in a bit more. Unlike Camille, I quite like them. But The Renovators, Top Design, and The Block, all on in the one period, I think it's home reno overkill. It's just timing for me.
So what's your favourite?
Oh, I probably like The Block because I really enjoyed the first series of The Block, so I understand its format. I know what the objectives are. The Renovators seems that I understand that they're revealing things as you go, and it's meant to build the suspense. But The Block, I know what's going to happen. I know what the outcome is. Their goals, they've got a room to do every X amount of days, whatever. If I was going to pick one, I actually don't really religiously watch any of them, but I'd pick The Block because I know that its format.
I guess that's what they're saying. With some of these shows, you're getting to know the contestants or the personalities. It is a slow build with ratings. Mm. And that's quite normal for some of these reality shows. So it's by no means, I wouldn't say, a done deal that it's not going to rate very well.
Yeah, yeah.
But as you said, there is a lot of content out there already within that genre, which is the big challenge for them. And given that the production is quite expensive, is it up to 20 to 25 million to make?
There's
a lot riding on this show.
Sure.
And it's been really heavily promoted as well. So I think the numbers are disappointing. Whereas if you look at MasterChef, it just keeps on performing relentlessly. 1.26 must be about 1.6 million must be about its average. It's amazing that it's continued to hold that audience. Alice, are you still watching MasterChef?
Yeah, I am. But as with previous series of MasterChef, I've kind of get to the end and I go, come on, get it over and done with. You know, it's next week will be their last week, and you know we've seen some challenges where there's been kind of no elimination or any suspense to hang on, and I just think, well, there's only a few contestants left. Let's make a last week. I'm sure next week they're going to, you know, go out with a bang as they have in the past. But I don't know. I kind of feel this dragging feeling. All right, let's be done. It was great. Let's go out now.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen also another couple of shows sort of dip in their fortunes. Top Design is pretty much fair to say it's flopped, hasn't it? And it started okay, below sort of a million, but now has dropped just to about sort of 500,000, I think.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah. They could probably argue the same thing. It's just started, so they could say that the audience is going to build. It's
yes.
It was on the back of the block on Wednesday night.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
So, which had a fairly good audience itself. The block did. I can't remember the actual figures, but you think, well, if the block had a good audience, it technically should carry on, but obviously not in that case.
Yeah, and we've seen Angry Boys recover a little bit to about just over 600,000. Which is about half its debut showing of over a million. Also seen Top Gear return to 9, which obviously the show moved over from SBS a while ago, posting 600,000 plus audience. And also seen that sort of relentless battle between at breakfast between Sunrise and Today. It's still looking like it's 7's year. Sunrise spanking a resurgent today recently.
What was that? Sorry, Robin, what was it doing?
Yeah, and it's been spanking it. Because obviously the battle today has been recovering and building an audience against Sunrise over a number of months. But just recently, Sunrise has been...
I would say it really started last year, that competition, and especially the strength in the Melbourne market for the Today Show. It's a real competition now, really.
Yes. I mean, just yesterday, in fact, there's only just 3,000 viewers between the two shows. Mm. So it's pretty much neck and neck now. So it'd be interesting to see how the rest of the year plays out. But it's still looking like, Camille, you think overall, Seven's year?
Yes, potentially it's looking that way from this point.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
I guess you could say, in terms of, if we're talking genres and a success for Seven, as we just quickly discussed, Australia's Got Talent.
Yeah.
How did that rate again? Is that over two million?
Yeah, and its grand final was 2.1 million.
That's amazing. I think that's such a strong rating. And we're seeing that genre of reality talent just continuing its strength.
Exactly, because it's not that new. I mean, Australian Idol was how many years ago?
Yeah, then that was canned.
Yeah.
But we hear that The Voice, which is doing really well in the US at the moment, is being brought to Australia potentially on 10, but it's already got X Factor, which again, they brought back to life. Yeah. And then we have The Voice on either 7 or either 9 or 10.
Is that the one with Christina Aguilera?
Yeah, where they blindfold.
Yeah.
They turn around or they blindfold the judges, so you can't see who's performing, so it's all in
The Voice.
So much more heightened emotion, obviously.
And it's interesting to note that SBS, in fact, which did really well with Go Back to Where You Came From, has scored another victory, its highest so far in ratings, with, of course, the Tour de France, Camille.
Exactly. Cadel Evans, you know, in a sport that's been dominated by European, American winners, we finally had an Aussie winner, and great. What did they rate? Over 700,000 in the metro markets and over 230,000 in regionals. So really,
massive.
Really strong for SBS. And it's big, you know, ka-ching for Cadel Evans in terms of corporate sponsorship as well, obviously.
Who's been moving in for him, do you know? Any brands that have already...
No one's been actually named, but you imagine the usual suspects in terms of sporting brands. His current sponsors are realestate.com.au and something with Ernst & Young as well.
Okay.
But I read in the paper the other day that his local agent, his phone's been ringing off the hook and his computer's crashed from all the emails and requests.
Oh, really?
I don't know if he's slightly exaggerating, but but I'd imagine that absolutely he'll be cashing it in.
Yes. It'll probably be on the next Gillette ad, shaving with Roger Federer or something like that.
I was just thinking of Gillette. Those really horrible Gillette ads.
Yeah. Oh, God. It's likely.
I'm looking forward to that.
Next, Alan Jones and Loser Critics.
You are listening to... Only one media company has the ability to connect brands with 95% of Australia. Southern Cross Austereo. For more information, visit southerncrossaustereo.com.au.
You're listening to the Mumbrella Cast. For more on all of these stories, visit mumbrella.com.au. Radio station 2GB has been announced as Australia's official commercial radio broadcaster for the 2012 London Olympics. Our editor, Tim Burrows, sat down with presenter Alan Jones for a chat on the announcement and the media in general.
These are all critics from people who are losers. They can't do what you do, so they want to have a pot shot and say, you know, Jones. I mean, a lot in newspapers. They think, oh, well, no one reads my column, but why do they listen to Alan Jones? I don't worry about any of that. I know what I do. I'm supposed to have started the Cronulla riots.
Do you ever listen to Media Watch?
No, never. It's just rubbish, really. It's rubbish. I mean, who's watching Media? Who are they? They're just sort of nasty little small-minded people on the ABC. I mean, more people are listening to Yellow Taxis than listening to Media Watch. But you see, if you listen to them, they'd say, well, I started the Cronulla riots. I mean...
So, Camille, what do you think of Media Watch?
I love it. I watch it actually at my desk, my 15-minute break on Tuesdays, because I don't really watch it. I don't watch it live. And it's just, it's great popcorn entertainment. Someone's got to keep these broadcasters, because Alan Jones
isn't a journalist.
Someone's got to keep them honest. And it's very entertaining.
Robin, his show is obviously very popular. What are your thoughts on talk radio?
Well, I must say I haven't listened to his show. I've just seen the interview on Mumbrella with Tim. But it struck me as the sort of person who'd just have a one-way conversation. I'm not sure that would make... It would make great radio, but it might have me sort of shouting at the radio set. Someone with such forthright opinions, I'm sure it'd be sort of entertaining, but I'm not sure I'd listen personally.
Camille, with the Olympics, do you tune in? Do you watch them?
On TV?
Yeah
I do, depending on the actual sport.
Sure. Would you be likely to listen to them on radio?
Oh, no. It's a visual. It's a visual game and spectacular.
Yeah.
I certainly wouldn't be listening to certain broadcasters talking about it. But I suppose the main thing for me with that interview, if I could just interject in terms of the whole debate around we're not journalists, we're broadcasters, and his point that, look, I get paid to express my opinions. I don't have a piece of paper saying I'm a journalist. Fine. From that perspective, Alan Jones, I absolutely see. I think that that's a fair point to make. He's not a journalist. But if his broadcasters from the, you know, 2GB or a talk station are going to go out and say that, then the program director of 2GB then shouldn't go to air on Radio National Breakfast and say, I think I have his quote here. He said to the presenter, "We've tried very, very hard to ensure that what we do is balanced. We always do," quote unquote. Now, anyone who listens to 5 minutes of a commercial talk show, particularly the higher rating ones, no names mentioned, will know that that is not true. It is not balanced. It is very opinionated. And if you don't like it, turn it off. Fine. You know, I don't listen to it myself, but other people do. And, you know, that's their prerogative. But then don't come out and say then that what we do is balanced, because it's not.
Mm. He's not, his job is not to be a news reader, is it? It's not to be objective and simply tell the facts.
Mm.
His job is to give a slant, his opinion on those facts, right?
Yeah, exactly. So my point is that if that's what they're doing, and well, that is what they're doing, then as the program director of 2GB, Ian Holland, you know, don't try to say that what they do is balanced, because it's not, and we don't expect it to be. We expect it to be opinionated.
Yeah, but presumably he has other rivals. People have is talk radio perhaps a phenomenon that's likely to grow in Australia, you think?
I think it's really interesting because there was this study done particularly on Alan Jones about 4 or 5 years ago by the Australia Institute. It's a Canberra-based think tank, and they wanted to look at more specifically the power that Alan Jones supposedly wields. Politicians, even the former Prime Minister John Howard, saying that he actually has the influence to sway elections. So it was an interesting look into that. And what, just really quickly, what it found, and this was, as I said, 4 or 5 years ago, so keeping that in mind, but also imagine that his audience demographic won't have changed much but since then, except for that they've gotten older, perhaps. but back then, the audience was roughly 180,000 Sydney-siders, predominantly almost 70% over 50-year-olds, a lot of pensioners and average income earners.
So is his audience dying out, do you think?
Well, he said in his interview with Tim that they're winning in all demographics, I think, which is an interesting point. I was trying to look online at Nielsen to find that breakdown, but unfortunately it wasn't readily available. But what the paper found was that the suggested perception of Alan Jones's influence and political sway is actually out of proportion with the size and nature of his audience. Mm. But even then, in the end, the paper actually concluded that the perception of power is sometimes just as important as power itself.
Mm, yeah. I mean, you did a study recently at Launch Group about Gen Z and their values. And, I just wondered whether you think Gen Z would listen to Alan Jones.
I really don't think so. You would be hard-pressed, I think, if you did a Vox Pop to find a Gen Zer.
Who's heard of him?
Who's heard of him,
yeah.
Or who'd want to hear about him.
That's a good challenge. We'll tap into that and hopefully get back to you next week. Yeah. Well, next, spoof PR. Does it work?
Our editor Tim received a letter in the mail this week from the Australian Interior Authority informing him of his redeployment. After some searching, he found out that the website included in the letter was from an ad agency draft FCB. Fenton PR then followed up to see if Tim was going to write about it. After inquiring, he found out that the spoof letter, for which brand we are yet to discover, was also sent to Fairfax Journalists, the company which is making journalists redundant seriously. Tim had previously banned the press releases of Draft FCB while working at B&T because they had sent a hoax about some staff departures that turned out to be a promotion for TV show Mad Men. So Camille, being in PR, when is a spoof acceptable, do you think, and when isn't it acceptable?
Well, first of all, April Fool's Day, you've got to watch your back. So that's a one day of the year as a journalist. From that perspective, it is acceptable, and it's on your head if you fall for a stupid story.
Yeah, but is anything fair game? Obviously, the thing that Tim, I guess, was upset about is the fact that journalists are being sacked.
No, exactly. And when I did look at the letter itself on Mumbrella, I just... Do these people know the thousands and thousands and thousands of journalists around the world and Australia who've lost their jobs recently? And GFC, I mean, it's ridiculous. You need to, it's just mean for that particular industry. There's just been so many job losses. I have so many friends who've been impacted by that. And it's insensitive.
Yeah. I'm just trying to work out the concept where it came from at the PR agency. Can you imagine, Camille, you work in a PR agency. Can you imagine them sitting around a meeting room table and thinking, oh, this is a great idea. That's hoax journalists and say that, you know, pretend that they've been fired. I just can't understand. PR people presumably are on top of the news. They know what's been happening at Fairfax.
Mm.
Do you think they would... This was a nod to what was happening at Fairfax, or they just totally came up with this idea in a vacuum?
I don't know if they would intentionally be insensitive. And was it the PR agency or was it Draft FCB? Was it Draft FCB who came up with the idea and the PR was just given that to...
I presume that Fenton PR and Draft FCB were working in collaboration. The press release came from Draft, but PR then followed up, so I'm sure that they were in the loop, yeah.
Yeah, I mean... Speaking of Mad Men, that was an example that you used and that Draft FCB was involved in. Just thinking about the spoof or the hoax ads from, was it a couple of years ago? That
yes.
Actually, not Draft FCB, but Razor Group, their creative agency, Us, did. So it was a print online ads on the fake cookware range,
yeah.
Madison Avenue. And it was actually... When we got to the bottom of it, it was promotion of Mad Men. But for the unknown consumer, the ads featured this fake cookware brand, Madison Avenue, and a picture of, you know, their products saying the only thing that can cook better than a woman. And they were just blatantly sexist ads. I thought they were great, actually. And then people were sent to the website, and, you know, there was a big reveal. And it won a few awards, I think, did it?
I can't recall, but I guess the thing that sticks out for me with that one is it's not hurting anyone. If someone goes into a shop and says, I'm looking for the Madison Avenue cookware range, you know, someone's going to say, oh, sorry, we don't stock that. You know, is that...
Yeah, but also if people see the ads and it clearly is chauvinistic and just sexist, I think that people these days will know that that was almost intentional.
Yeah.
And that it will get a reaction?
Absolutely.
So that was clearly the point. Whereas this, as a journalist, if I was in Fairfax, the only words I would see is notice of your redeployment, your services will no longer be required. That's what sticks out to me. And that this 2021 date of issue, it's not clear.
Yeah.
And I mean, who looks at the date? Who looks at the date first and then reads the letter? I don't.
No.
Yeah.
You just assume it's current.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it smacks to me of getting a PR agency or advertising agency, in this case, trying to get attention at all costs. And in fact, it reminds me of the recent stunt by Vanish Nappasan to try and sponsor the White House. It's just a bit, you know, it's a bit much for my taste. Alice, do you think that, you know, when is PR just a bit too much about getting attention?
Well, I think the thing, I guess the big question here is, well... I think it was highly inappropriate. It's sending it to one of the most cynical professions in the world, a bunch of journalists, sending them a letter telling them that their services are no longer required. Of course you're going to get a reaction.
And who are already, if they still have a job, grumpy and underpaid.
Exactly. So, one thing to send it to trade press, another to send it to journalists of a company who it's so widely reported that they're struggling there, so that's a whole nother thing in itself. But we're talking about it, aren't we? And Tim wrote something about it, and we're talking about it here, and it's going to, you know, cause a bit of fuss.
Absolutely, and it has caused a fuss you know, on Twitter, but does it make me think favorably towards whatever the brand is that they're going to be revealing, whether it is a tobacco company? Are we sure about that yet? I'm not sure. Is it going to make me think favorably of the agencies that were involved? I'm not going to say yes at this stage.
No.
So it hasn't worked for me. I'm talking about it, but I'm not being particularly positive or, yeah, you know, supportive, raving about the amazing campaign.
Yes. Are you intrigued to know what the brand is, though, behind it?
Yes, I am. Yeah. So I guess there's the result from that perspective.
Yeah.
But then what is their objective? What result do they want to gain?
Mm. I wonder whether, you mentioned tobacco clients there, I wonder whether this could only work for a vice client as such. You know, it couldn't, well, it certainly wouldn't work for, say, a charity or something like that. To have this kind of attention and to have this kind of negative attention, I guess, would only really work for something that pushes the boundaries already in terms of the brand.
Yeah, it seems as if the intention was to, you know, prod journalists in the ribs and perhaps stir them up a little bit. I mean, Camilla, there's sort of, obviously you work in a PR agency, there's certain sorts of stories that you can bank on to get a reaction from a journalist, as in perhaps a list of, you know, fail-safe techniques to at least get someone ringing, calling you back.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you expect me to actually reveal that to you, or would you like a? We do have a consultation fee if you're interested. But
anything away free.
Well, that's all we have time for today. A big thank you to Launch Management Group's Camille Alacon.
Thanks, guys.
And Mumbrella's Alice Telikovsky.
Thanks, guys.
The Mumbrella Cast was recorded at the studios of CBS Interactive. Ciao for now.